Welcome back to another episode of A Desi Woman Podcast. I am your host, Sonia Gokwai, and the voices I am seeking may have never been heard before, but their stories deserve to be told. What is a Desi woman? She is a dynamic, fearless, and strong woman. She is your mother, your grandmother, your daughter, your sister. She is every one of us who is on an endless pursuit of self-empowerment and fulfillment. I am Sonia Gokwai, and I am a Desi woman.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of A Desi Woman Podcast. I am your host, Sonia Gokwai, and today we are so excited to be joined by Dr. Anjana Kundu. Anjana did her medical training in the United States and in India, and is a board-certified physician in pain medicine, integrative medicine, and anesthesiology. Dr. Kundu has many years of experience in pain and palliative care across the globe and is an accomplished member of academia and an experienced educator. Dr. Kundu is impassioned about building, growing, and leading successful pediatric programs and is a founding member and former president of the Society for Pediatric Pain Medicine, and co-founder of Proactive Pain Solutions, a healthcare education and consultancy company dedicated to improving the care of children experiencing pain. Anjana, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sonia. Thank you for having me on your show.
Anjana, your story is so inspiring, and I am so thoroughly excited to have you here. And I wanted to begin this conversation by offering that you and I shouldn't really even be having this dialogue. In fact, in reading your life story and experiences, I would offer that your presence here in the United States as a renowned and respected physician and business owner is a statistical aberration in some respects. You have, quote unquote, beat the odds in so many ways, and our interview will proceed. Listeners will better understand this statement. So just to understand, you are the youngest of eight children, five older brothers and three sisters, and you come from a small town in India known as Bijawa, which is about 70 miles north of New Delhi. Your dad was a farmer, and your family has been for many generations, and your mother did not work outside the home. Also, to date, you are the only person from your village, male or female, who has went on to become a physician. So if we can begin there, and you can walk me through your early childhood and early experiences in Bijawa with your family.
Sure. Sonia, thank you. Honestly, have to say, I never thought my story is that different, because I guess I never really stopped to think about it. But occasionally now I will be doing something and I'll look back at what I'm doing today to, it'll just remind me of where I started. Or when I look at my child, my daughter, who's 17 now, and things that she does, and occasionally I'll try to think about what I was like when whatever age that was. And those are the times when I actually do think about and reflect, or if I'm particularly feeling a lot, I do a lot more gratitude work these days. So I do think about where I have been. But I still don't think it's that amazing, but thank you for saying that. I do, however, feel completely overwhelmed sometimes to think about the fact that this village that I grew up in, I'm now nearly 51 years old. And even today, at this age, this village has no transportation, public transportation that goes there. And it still has a school that's just elementary level, so fifth grade. And that was where I grew up, and with five older brothers who were a lot older than me. And I was basically, I'm the, as you said, the eighth of eight children, youngest. I was born nearly 10 years after the last one. So I kind of joke about that I have the decade to myself. So with that, I just don't even know how, I was such an anomaly to begin with in my entire family, and my obviously wasn't a planned child to begin with, given that I came 10 years later and they had plenty of children to raise before that. But my dad's a farmer, my mother, housewife, both. My mom never had the opportunity to go to school, and dad had, I think, fourth or fifth grade education at that time. We had a fair amount of means for that village, as in my father was one of the more affluent landowners because he was the only son, and he inherited the family farms. So we had plenty, but it never, like, I don't know. We had plenty, but yet it never felt like there was, you know, just, oh, that we were rolling in wealth or anything like that. Partly that was because my parents were all, they always sort of made us feel that, you know, you don't need more than what you have. And if you have more than what you need, then you share it with others. In terms of education level, no woman, my mom wasn't that much of an anomaly at that time, as in women, at least in the environment that I was growing up in, did not necessarily get educated. Not even till the fifth grade, that school that was available in our village, which was free, you know, it's a government school, doesn't mean that the girls were actually going there. Girls were doing housework, or they were, when they were a little bit older, either married off or they were working on the farms. And to be in this family, in this environment, I don't even know how that happened. Partly because my parents valued education, partly maybe because I had these older brothers, older siblings, older brothers who, because of my parents' attitude towards education, had been sent away into the cities to go get their bachelor's and their master's. So by the time I finished my fifth grade, my brothers were already employed with an after master's degree from Delhi University, a couple of them. So I think my path was paved by them in terms of, I already had an advantage over maybe perhaps some of the other children in the village or even in my own family compared to my sisters.
That is incredibly inspiring. And you did mention that your sisters had to drop out of school after the sixth grade, and you've stated your mom didn't have the opportunity to go to school. And what's remarkable is that you were in medical school at the age of 16 and subsequently did your postgrad and residency training in anesthesiology from the prestigious KEM Hospital in Mumbai. This is a huge accomplishment. And you mentioned you're the only one from your village to get to this education level. So I want to ask you how this makes you feel for both you and your female siblings. But as a follow-up question, what are your thoughts on improving educational opportunities for girls across India? And, you know, to be able to witness the unleashing of the full potential of young women across India and South Asia would truly be a sight to behold, and in other geographies, I might add as well. But just want to get your thoughts on that briefly.
Absolutely. Well, yes, my mom, like I said, had no opportunity to go to school, not because they didn't have the means, but mostly because that was just not the norm. Girls didn't necessarily get educated. And my sisters couldn't get beyond sixth grade education because by that time, the last one of my brothers had finished his high school from the neighboring village. And it wasn't acceptable for a girl to go to another village, to another school, if there was no male member of the family going with them. So it just wasn't considered okay. So those two had to drop out from after they'd completed their sixth grade. But how it makes me feel, why, how did I end up getting to med school by 16 years of age? Well, I think I, you know, with all the siblings going to school and obviously some of them, as I said, to the university, I was always just interested. I was the youngest. I had nobody in my age group, and all I had seen were these college students as brothers, and education sort of seemed like the good thing to do. And seeing my brothers go off to the city and, you know, bring some of the city perspective seemed like there is a life way beyond this little sphere here. And for some reason, I think even as a young kid, I believed that I was meant to be there. I don't know what there was, but I was meant to be there, not here. And so because my brothers had been exposed to a bigger world, they found out about boarding school, and that's how I ended up jumping from my little pond into sort of a bigger lake. And then basically that opened up the ocean for me and the rest of the world. So boarding school was just an amazing experience. And obviously I was going to a English medium boarding school where education was very broad. I was taught English by a British English teacher, and my history teacher was just this incredibly well-read scholar, and just had his family had been educated overseas, and just like my world just opened up after I left my little, like I said, my pond. And I think what that means for me is obviously that set the foundation for my life's trajectory. So therefore going to medical school from there wasn't such a big anomaly. I think in India, as Sonia, you may or may not be aware that you can go to medical school or a engineering school or a law school after your high school. So a lot of times, 17 years of age, you can easily go. I jumped into it early just because that's all I saw around me. I went to school early. I was like, I think 3.5 years old, and I was in first grade just because I could read, because I had all the stuff around me from my siblings. So they put me in first grade at 3.5 before I even turned 4 years of age. So I think I just completed it a little bit earlier than others. And like I said, I'm very appreciative of the opportunities. And therefore, what it means at a greater stage is the importance of education in a woman's life. You know, there are plenty of children, plenty of girls that are way smarter, way more resilient, I believe, than, and I can only speak about myself, but they don't have the opportunities. I think it is upon the rest of us to some extent to help create those opportunities for those women, those children, especially females in India till date. I think, you know, we talk about it here in US too, the inequality and inequity. But it is still way more prevalent in a society like India. Even though we've had a prime minister, we've had Rani Lakshmibai for, you know, since 1800s. But still, the women in India are still struggling when it comes to getting that equal opportunity. And it is very dependent on where you were born, when you were born. And I think doing more for the rural communities, especially for women, is just something that I feel very strongly about. And as a matter of fact, I do volunteer intermittently at a school which is completely dedicated to rural children, not necessarily just girls, but I think that is something I could start doing. I've been investigating sponsoring education, free education and scholarship for rural girls, especially from the state that I come from northern India, Haryana. I would love to see that materialize.
That's wonderful. And you're just the embodiment sort of what can occur. And as you stated, given the right opportunities. So thank you for that response. And I want to ask you, in 1995, you immigrated to the US and married to an Indian American. And the unthinkable happened. You had to flee for your life and safety within 5 days of arrival in this country without money, a passport, or any other possessions except your educational certificates and even a $20 bill that you managed to get from your abusive ex-husband. You were in a shelter for a few months and had to find work where you could, including at Walgreens and then as a research assistant at Northwestern University. And domestic violence and spousal abuse are so widespread amongst our communities, not only in India, but amongst the diaspora. And so I have to ask you, what was the defining moment where you said, that's it, I cannot endure this and I have to get out? Because I would argue that you may not even have been supported by our community or the culture, and you were just new to this country. And all too often, we are encouraged to stick it out, be more accommodating or flexible. So I want to ask you about those moments in what I would describe as a portrait of courage in making those difficult decisions.
Yeah. So when did I make this decision? How was there a defining moment? I don't know, actually, to be honest with you, Sonia, because I feel in a way it was always in me. There was always in me, because as I was hearing my own self talk earlier, I had this belief there is a life that I had envisioned vaguely, like I had a vague picture of it in my mind. And that certainly never included domestic violence of any kind, right? Not to say that I didn't grow up around it. You're absolutely right. In the Indian diaspora, and especially in the rural communities, even today, it is very, very common, unfortunately. It's not even, well, I say that it's common in rural. It's not actually. Educated families, educated households still deal with these issues. And I don't think I witnessed it in my own home to some extent, but I don't think I witnessed my own parents engage in any of that. I think arguments for sure. But I do know that there's always this big differential between a man and woman. And I grew up in that household, right? My household was very traditional. Men held all the power. Women did what they were told. And my mother was such an antithesis of the you stay in your limited box kind of woman, even though she had no education, nothing. She was such a bright woman. She was so kind. She treated people with respect. I watched her as a little girl when in the village, there would be these hawkers that would come to sell clothing or utensils or vegetables or whatever it is, right? They would come by on their little bicycles or rickshaws or whatever. And she would always be buying something from them. It would be hot summer days in northern India. And she would just invite these people. They'd sit in our breezeway. We had like this big breezeway. And she would give them water or the buttermilk, because buttermilk is very cooling. And she would always end up buying something. And she had quite a bit of like this reputation of that if she bought something, they would have a good business day for them. So people would actually come. These sellers would just come by our house. And, you know, I remember my older brothers, my father, all chiding and actually being upset with my mother for doing that. And it was only when I was older, I realized that what she was doing was basically so many things. A, she wasn't accepting the status quo, right? She was saying, we have abundance. We can share it. She was realizing these people are trying to make a living in the heat. She didn't know whether they had a chance to stop, have a drink of water, whatever. She'd say, come take a little rest. And you know what? I have something I can give you. You have something that you can give me. And she did that with a lot of the people around her. So my point, this long-winded story is about saying that she was a woman who made me believe that we can choose a different life no matter what the circumstances. And I think that's, even though I didn't, it's not like I clearly held that and that's what I carried everywhere, but I think those seeds were the ones that have always helped me come out of a situation no matter what. So now coming to my own marriage and my abusive relationship, I just never believed that anybody, I'm an educated woman, I deserve the respect that, you know, I've seen my mom give. Didn't matter what the class or the caste of these people that came by to her house. If she could do that, the workers in our family, in our home, in our farms, all got a due recognition and respect. And so I just didn't believe that we had that kind of a differential, that, you know, anybody has the power to just abuse somebody else in that way. And I think that probably made me just take the step that I did. I ended up here with nobody that I knew, no family here other than him, my husband, ex-husband, and educated man. And I just didn't know how he was so much more in power over me, where he could take away, the moment I landed here, took away my passport, took away all the jewelry or the money and my certificates and anything of value that I possessed, he had taken away. And he would actually disconnect the phones. And we had two phone instruments in this apartment where he lived. And he would take them with him. So I had no way to even communicate with anybody else. So to me, that, you know, as a board certified MD, it made no sense to me that why that needed to be that way. And there was no reason for him to hit me just because I had difference of opinion, because I believed differently. And, you know, that I wasn't willing to go along with the fact that he was in a different relationship here with somebody else, that I just wanted to be independent of, I don't mind if you have a relationship with somebody else as long as, you know, I'm not forced to have a relationship with you if I don't want to. So I made that decision that this is not sustainable, because I tried to talk. We had discussions, and when I tried to express, I got beat up. And when I just felt like, you know, my voice doesn't count, then I had to take action. And whatever opportunity I could find, it was 5 days later, I just decided that I am capable. I can take care of myself. I will find my way back. And that was the original plan. I was just going to leave. I just knew Chicago was the nearest city. And I had a friend from med school who was doing residency. I figured I'll get there and then I'll just fly back to India. I'll borrow money. I'll fly back to India. I'm a physician in India. I can work my way. I'll pay her back. And that's that. As far as you're saying that this is not supported, it would absolutely not be supported by my family. So I had a plan to just go somewhere that they didn't even know where I was, just so that they didn't have to, you know, first of all, that they would not accept it, and who knows what that would have resulted into. And also, you know, it's not looked upon very kindly culturally for you to have a daughter who's divorced. And of course, despite all the education and their theoretical beliefs, they ultimately did believe that to some extent a woman needs to compromise, and the woman was their sister here. And so, but this sister was not ready to compromise. So that was my plan. I was going to leave. I was going to make a life of my own. But because I couldn't find my passport, I couldn't leave the country. And here I am 25 years later.
Well, that is just a remarkable story of courage. And really, I can't thank you enough for sharing it, because if there is somebody listening to this, and I know there will be, I truly hope that you find the strength and courage to think about leaving a violent situation. And I recognize every situation is different. I will have links in the podcast notes to various organizations around the world that are committed to helping survivors of domestic violence, and both in the United States and amongst our diaspora. So thank you